victory. Quite simply, we would have to hide in Fior, unable to come out for fear of the impending doom. Though that plan itself wasn't really feasible. While the lower levels of Fior were protected from a void attack, that did not mean that the entirety of Fior was safe. The world barrier could still be broken, which would cause the inevitable collapse of the world. So, yeah, another invasion from Ragnarokker was definitely not something that I could deal with in the short term. Right now, my priority was for my worlds to get back on their feet and put this mess behind them. There would surely be a lot more focus on the void in the future, but that was fine. If it got them to take this more seriously next time, even better. Chelsea had informed me when I was setting my alarms that she planned to expand the admin privileges of digital conversion to include all four energies, which I approved of. While it wasn't something that I planned to open to the masses, having the ability to use the system at will like that would surely become a powerful tool in the future. As for why I wouldn't put something so convenient in the hands of everyone, even when it could relieve the current housing or food crises, quite simple. That also would mean that I would be giving potential villains an unlimited supply of energy with which to do even more damage. That said, maybe there would be a way to tie karma into the system. Those with higher positive karma would be able to enjoy a discount on the system, which would increase the better their karma. This would allow good Samaritan citizens to take care of their communities, while similarly preventing those with unsavory habits from making use of the system to do harm. Though, would it be possible to increase the cost of items through that system based on negative karma? I couldn't help but think of that at the same time. If that was the case, it could be seen as a penalty for criminal conduct carried out through the system. I focused, posing the idea to Ashley, who was rather prompt to respond. Sadly, there was no current way for them to accurately gauge karma within an independent system, as that was handled almost entirely by the underworld. The only benchmarks that existed were the right to enter the Golden Palace, as well as the punishment of being imprisoned beneath it. Additionally, they did not have a way to increase the mana cost of items based on the user's data. According to Ashley, the system is very strict on its requirements for digital conversion. An exact amount of energy is needed for any product, with no more or less being accepted. With the new plug-in that Chelsea helped develop, the cost was being passed directly to the void. But the cost itself was still there, and was something that we could not circumvent. Regardless, I kept the idea in mind for later, as it was at least one way to build a lesser punishment into the system for those that had brought negative karma to themselves. I also suggested the possibility that anyone who qualified for the Golden Palace deserved to have an 80% discount on the system, once Chelsea had finished creating the plugins for the other energy types. Ashley seemed rather open to this idea, though she said that it would take a while longer to get it implemented. Chapter 44. 50 years. This is how long it took for the world's full recovery from the previous invasion, including restoring enough of Deccan and Sherdeen's infrastructure to make them self-sufficient again. I was only made aware of this when I checked the time that had passed after the acceleration had ended. By this point, things should have calmed down, right? I thought to myself, as I stood from the couch, preparing to descend once again. I had told myself before the invasion happened that I would do my best to limit my time skips after it was over, and the world had recovered. Not far away, Dana and Tsubaki were waiting for me, having arrived near the start of the acceleration. I gave them both a small nod before focusing as blue light wrapped around my body. Once I arrived in the body of my host, I found myself sitting in the familiar throne room of Olympus, rolling my shoulders. Even though Tsubaki had chosen to ascend, it seemed like my host had enough aversion to being covered in dust to take very slight action every once in a while, which I was honestly thankful for, as it meant that I wasn't smothered with it when I came back. Udana, I mentally called out to the Kitsune goddess. How is everything with Deccan? A lot better now, honestly. Udana spoke with a tone of relief. We've essentially remodeled the planet with all the new construction. Though there is one slight issue, but I'm sure it will resolve itself in time. What is it? I asked, unable to help myself from feeling concerned. The magic system of Deccan. It takes time for something to adjust to the aura of Demensium to drop cards, so the first batch of monster spawns didn't drop any. Even now, the drop rate is only a tenth of what it used to be. Normally, this wouldn't be a problem, because we had the ability to synthesize any of the cards for the first four tiers of magic, but because all of the world's technology was destroyed, you lost all of that, right? I asked, with a groan, which Udana confirmed. They're rebuilding the database to get that started up again, but it's slow going. The Mitong aren't any help, because they use runic magic almost exclusively. On the other hand, the March have been more helpful with this, though they only had the full collections for the first two tiers. Because Demensium isn't as evenly distributed in their realm, it's harder to get high-tier cards.
Right.
Is there anything I can do to help? I asked, though I wasn't really sure what could be done. No, I was just letting you know. This will resolve itself in due time.
Right.
By the way, did Chelsea manage to get the admin plug-in expanded for digital conversion? Udana's voice perked up slightly at that. That's right. It was partly thanks to that that we were able to get everything done so quickly. I took part in a lot of the process and could use that admin account to make things go a lot more smoothly. I was sure that the people loved that. The God Queen of Deccan personally taking part in recovery efforts, providing free housing for those who had been rendered homeless. And in truth, it really was a great thing for her to do. Additionally, by now the different games should have progressed a bit further, people picking up old quests again. I didn't know if Sun was going to be making the Machine Empire again or not, but there would be time to get caught up on all of that. As I was thinking to myself, I heard the door to the throne room open, with Tsubaki, Gerard, Dana, and Lifra all walking in. It had been quite some time since I saw Gerard, as he never used his access to the admin room, so I gave them all a nod of greeting. Lifra, Gerard, is there anything that you would like to report?
Nope, Lifra smiled brightly, shaking her head. Everything's been pretty normal on my end. Well, by my standards, anyways.
Gerard hesitated before nodding as he spoke.
Sir, I would like to report that the establishment of fifth-tier magic has had some success. With the coordinated efforts between myself and the Goddess of Magic, we have created some basic spells utilizing the fifth tier of magic. I gave a small nod at that, focusing on Gerard.
What can you tell me about this magic, then?
Gerard focused, lifting a hand as a speck of mana appeared above his finger, no bigger than a grain of sand. As we concluded long ago, the fifth tier of magic relies on miniaturization. Simply by shrinking the spell and updating the parameters to the fifth tier, it is possible to create spells of the fourth tier with minimal consumption. However, the true benefit of this magic tier comes from the ability to combine a large number of these spells into one. As he said that, a cloud of blue specks appeared, swirling around one another. This is the core of my being. After I updated the spell components to the fifth tier, with this spell, it is possible to create an individual like myself with no more than 5,000 points of mana. Though that is the case, the difficulty of these spells have increased exponentially. Unless it is a being with some form of ability to instantly recall microscopic details or memorize extremely complex spell diagrams, I do not believe they will be capable of wielding this ability in battle.
That makes sense, I said, with a faint sigh.
There are very few existences that can even use the fourth tier of magic in battle.
Dana nodded her head quickly when I said that.
I've created tools to help with that before, but yeah. Also, fourth-tier spells are really not needed in a normal fight. You can have one to serve as an autonomous battle spell, and then use third-tier spells for the others. But there's no need to have more than that. Anything else can be done more efficiently at the third tier.
Gerard seemed to agree, dismissing the points of light above his head.
Perhaps. However, the goddess of magic has expressed interest in using the fifth tier of magic as the foundation for creating a world. As of now, she has yet to make any breakthrough in her research, but she has used the old spell that your servants use to create energy-based worlds as the foundation. That's fine. We'll get to that point eventually. Whether it's Ashley that makes that breakthrough or Rion, it's bound to happen. In fact, it would probably end up being a combination of Rion's magic with Ashley's code.
Oh! Lifra suddenly opened her eyes wide. I just remembered!
The Another World Research Group said that they want to meet you whenever you are back in the world.
The what now?
I blinked, utterly unfamiliar with the name. Given that they were leaving a message with Lifra, they had to be a popular research group, but not one that I had heard of.
That's the new name for the group James is in charge of, Lifra smiled brightly. They came up with that name a few months after V-Day.
It didn't take a genius to understand that V-Day likely stood for Void Day, the day that the invasion nearly destroyed numerous worlds. Though, would it be V-Week for Lorik and Spica?
Right. I'll go see what they want.
Tsubaki? Dana?
I looked at the duo, but Dana shook her head.
I've got to get back to work. I'll let Tsuba join you.
Tsubaki hesitated before nodding her head.
Very well. I shall accompany my keeper.
I'll lead the way, Lifra announced. You don't know the coordinates for their new base, so it'll be easier with me along.
I let out a sigh, nodding my agreement as I stood and gestured for her to lead the way. For now, Olympus was still positioned in Fior, as I had not moved it away after the invasion. After my meeting with James and his group, I would have to start moving it around again, like before. Lifra hummed happily to herself, leading Tsubaki and I out of Olympus. Once outside, she drew a golden dagger and cut open a gate through the void. I arched a brow at the dagger, to which she smiled.
Something that I had them make me. This thing can bypass the void barriers like a back door. Oh, right. Those have gotten a lot stronger after the previous attack. You can't just teleport around easily anymore. Well, Auravi can, but not normal people like us.
I doubted that any of us could qualify as normal people, though the fact that even Lifra needed a tool to help her establish the portal meant that the barriers must have been strengthened considerably. Tsubaki seemed to have similar thoughts, staring at the dagger in Lifra's hand intently. The two of us followed behind her, walking into a large lobby. Immediately, circular ports opened up in various points of the room, turrets deploying and scanning as they aimed at us. Tsubaki's hair stood on end, manifesting a pair of daggers, while Lifra calmly stood in place. Sure enough, the turrets disappeared after confirming our identities, a digital voice speaking up.
Welcome, Keeper, Lifra, Tsubaki. Please proceed to Area 8B to meet AWR staff.
Okay, Lifra smiled again. Can you activate the elevator to get us there quickly?
Affirmative.
There was the sound of sliding metal as a door opened along one of the walls, Lifra rushing over to enter. Tsubaki and I looked at one another, following behind. Once the door closed, the elevator slid down and then rushed off horizontally.
So this is what happens when you give someone like Chelsea an unlimited budget with the digital conversion system, I muttered to myself.
It took roughly 5 minutes in the elevator before we arrived at our destination.
Why didn't she just make a teleporter like Olympus, though? She's got to know how to do that.
Easy, Chelsea's voice spoke up as the elevator doors opened. Any magic or technology that allows transportation without crossing the intervening space has at least some reliance on the void. I'm working on a subspace elevator that folds space without using the void, but that's still in development. This facility relies as little on the void as possible with its daily necessities. Given that we have the planet to ourselves, we constructed a solar farm roughly the size of a continent in the northern hemisphere and get all of the power that we need to operate the facility through that. We'll use the DC system when it comes to acquiring materials we need for work, but we want to make sure that there is no regular connection between this planet and the outside void that can be used as a channel for void beasts to attack.
Chelsea cocked her hips, crossing her arms as she said that with a grin. I could only nod my head, stepping out of the elevator with the others.
That's impressive, though.
What did you call us here for?
Chelsea blinked, quickly entering business mode as she gestured for us to follow.
This way. We're keeping it in Vault 8, she said,
and we all followed behind her, not entirely sure what we were getting ourselves into.
Ever since I finished the plug-in for the DC system and fully opened up the admin accounts to free creations, I've been working on energy combinations. After all, that was mine and James's specialty when we came to this world. As she said that, she led us to a large black door, which only opened when Chelsea separated a portion of her divinity to use as the key. Because of this, I've been able to create a few powerful items capable of drawing a theoretically limitless amount of different energies from the void, like chakra, elemental ki, and so on. When the vault opened, Chelsea led us through what appeared to be an armory, each item sealed in a clear container. I could see a staff brimming with fiery mana, a bracer radiating a dark energy, and even a bone wand that seemed to chill the air. However, Chelsea passed by all these, opening another door at the end of the hall. On the other side of the door was a single case in the middle of the room, containing a golden ring. Once I got this thing working, I knew that I couldn't let it get out, she said. And I could immediately tell why, as I sensed the powerful divinity resting within the ring.
Chapter 45. Is that what I think it is? I asked, hesitantly, looking at the ring within the glass display. Chelsea let out a long sigh, nodding her head.
If you think that it's a ring designed to automatically convert the energy of the void into the four basic types, then undergo the complex fusion process to create raw divinity. In which case, yes. Yes, that is exactly what you think it is.
I'm feeling that there's a twist here. I shook my head, looking back at the small kitsune. If you made something like this and it worked properly, there is no way that you wouldn't be using it yourself. Equip one to Tracia and send more to Olympus. You had me come here as soon as I descended, so what's wrong with it?
Chelsea's brow twitched faintly, but she nodded her head. When I created that ring, I wanted to make an item that would essentially make a god immortal. As you know, divinity is basically a god's life pool. With a steady stream of it from an item like this, they'd be invincible. No need for any worshippers, no need to worry about taking damage in battle.
Still waiting for the twist.
Getting to that, she spoke up, glancing up at me. There was an incident. Are you familiar with the divine planet that tried to devour Sanctum?
Vaguely, I nodded, before hesitating. Did the ring try to eat you?
The ring did indeed attempt to devour my divinity. She sighed. See, this is something that I only discovered after making the item. The process of converting the void into divinity essentially created a divine spark within the ring, giving it the semblance of a soul. However, without any form of consciousness, it attempts to devour all divine energy that it comes into contact with.
Is there any way to subdue that instinct? I asked,
to which Chelsea shook her head.
If there was, I wouldn't have had this sitting in storage for the last 3 months.
Three? If you had this for 3 months, and it was such a problem, why not simply destroy it?
When I asked that, the response that I received was a long groan.
That was the first thing I tried. However, my plan worked. Not the destroying it part, the part involved with creating it. Because it is limitlessly generating its own divinity, it can instantly recover from any form of damage that I inflict on it. I put it in a system null zone, shattered it, dispelled its divinity, and was on my way to dispose of the remains when it fused back together. Good as new, as if I hadn't done a single thing.
Have you tried throwing it into a giant volcano? When I asked that, Chelsea's brow twitched and she looked at me with an accusatory gaze.
Udana asked me that, too. She then spent the next 8 hours showing me what that was referring to. To answer the question, though, no, I am not throwing it into a volcano on the off chance that the divine instinct spreads to the volcano, awakening a volcanic divine monster.
True, that would be very bad. We're just recovering from the last round of danger.
Likewise, throwing it into space would be just as bad. Have you tried getting Ashley to cut off its access to the digital conversion system? Permanently, I mean? Thing is, it's not actually using the DC system anymore. I incorporated the core mechanics of the system into the ring's design instead, to prevent having an additional admin account floating about. Theoretically, the null zone and dispersing its divinity should have done the trick. The fact that it didn't means that it has gone beyond what I can control. I gave a small nod, turning my attention back towards the ring. Those weren't the rules to convert energy based on our magic system, but from the void itself. Is it possible that creating the ring like that engraved its existence in the void? Or something like that? That's an idiotic theory, Chelsea immediately retorted, before letting out a long groan. Unfortunately, it was the one that I came up with, too. I was hoping you'd have a better answer for me. Literally any answer would be better than that. Trying to overwhelm the ring with raw power to wipe out its instincts and subdue it would be a better answer than that. Before you ask, no. I tried that, too. I couldn't help but chuckle, turning back to face her. Though, if that's the case, why didn't your mana refinery repair itself? It was also made to use the DC system, right? Exactly. It was made as an interface with the DC system. Chelsea gave a weak smile, her ears drooping. No matter how advanced the interface, it was just that. This was an item that was designed to replicate the system, endlessly creating divinity until it, itself, became a divine object. Now, because its existence is constantly creating the very thing that fuels its existence, it has become impossible to destroy by conventional means. At the same time, its instinct to devour divine energy means that I can't give it to any god. Have you tried having James go to the void to find where it is anchored? It could be a void beast, or anything, right? When I asked that, Chelsea nodded her head. I tried, but he doesn't even know what to look for. The mark in the void could be an insignificant speck of void energy, for all we know. Right. You've concluded that the thing can't be destroyed, and you clearly don't want to give it to me because it would start to drain me dry. Why did you call us here? I focused on Chelsea, and she manifested a silver device in one hand. This is why, she said, pushing the button. I felt a chaotic surge of energy within the display case and could almost feel a cry of pain echoing out as the ring shook. Alarmed, my body instinctively entered battle mode after the recent invasion. Because of that, I was able to catch a small detail, something that I would have missed if I was perceiving time in the normal flow. For the briefest of moments, a health bar appeared above the ring. My eyes went wide when I saw that, and Chelsea nodded her head in satisfaction, lowering the remote. It's alive. Like I said, we gave it a divine spark. For all intents and purposes, this ring is now a living creature. Furthermore, it is recognized by your world system. Therefore, you want me to smite it, right? I asked with a sigh. Chelsea quickly nodded her head in confirmation. Smiting was an option that I very rarely used, but could completely destroy the existence of anything registered as one of my assets. However, smiting in this manner was an option available only to the Keeper themselves. Leaving this here is just begging for trouble to come knocking at our door later. It could grow more powerful or develop awareness. Right now it is just raw divinity, but if it is tainted by someone's divinity and not purged fast enough, it might gain powers related to the person it obtained the energy from. I wouldn't feel safe storing this, even in our most secure vault, where we keep the seeds of the planet slimes. I feel like I just heard something dangerous. But fine, it doesn't cost me anything to smite. Just give me a minute, I said as I closed my eyes, choosing to ascend. Immediately I found where my host was, and selected the ring contained in the cage in front of it. With a thought, I selected the option to smite the ring, watching it dissolve into nothing. At the same time, I investigated the other items in the vault.
all of them were similar to the ring in design, being items that intrinsically create their own energy type. Looking into some of the deeper vaults, wow, she really does have world slime seeds. But why, though? I shook my head, realizing that this wasn't important. The ring's existence had been nullified from its core, so it was unable to recover even with its almost paradoxical properties. That said, I descended, finding a relieved-looking Chelsea standing in front of a now-empty cage.
Thank goodness, she wiped her forehead. I wasn't sure how long I'd need to keep this thing in the vault before you stopped accelerating the world.
Right. Now what about the other one? I asked, causing Chelsea to blink.
Other what now?
She looked over at me in obvious confusion. When I was going through the vault, there was another item that had the smite option available. And no, it wasn't the seeds. Why do you have those, anyways?
Chelsea shook her head rapidly.
Not important right now.
What item?
I rolled my eyes, glancing towards the sealed vault door that we came from.
Bone wand. Looked fairly necromantic. It registered as a level 3000 entity, according to the system.
Did it now.
Chelsea's eyes narrowed, turning to walk to the other room in the vault. She walked over to the display case showing the necromantic wand in question, crossing her arms and standing in front of it.
Did you think you were clever, hiding like this?
There was no response from the wand, Chelsea's eyes narrowing further before she called out,
Deliver energy shock to case 832, intensity level 5.
Immediately after she said that, there was a surge of energy within the case, and I could feel the energy of the wand trembling. However, it still remained silent.
Intensity 8, Chelsea ordered, and the energy began surging stronger and stronger. Still. Intensity...
Fine, the wand suddenly shouted,
surprisingly speaking in a normal language.
Stop! Jeez! What is wrong with you, girl? Can't a wand take a nap in peace?
You don't nap, Chelsea said in a cold tone.
So what's with the silent treatment? You have been in this vault for 2 months, 3 weeks, and 5 days. You could have spoken at any time before this, right?
With how you keep treating that ring, you think I'd want to just volunteer that I can talk? I'm made of death, kid. I don't have a death wish, the wand retorted, sounding like an angry old man.
And where did you learn that kind of language?
She perked her brow as she asked.
I was more curious about where it learned language, period. I'm made of souls. Some stuff just sort of leaked in. What, is it a crime to be alive? Or are you going to experiment on me like the ring?
The ring was innately dangerous with its very existence. Are you? Chelsea asked. And I could feel the wand shudder.
No, I'm perfectly normal. Feel free to pretend that I don't exist.
Chelsea's lips tugged upwards, unable to keep her serious demeanor.
So, what can you do then? I'm guessing the tests weren't the full extent of your abilities.
You're not going to leave me alone, are you?
No, I am not,
Chelsea answered the wand, which seemed to let out a trembling groan.
Fine. I can control ghosts, like I showed you, or I can create spirits, or draw them out of the underworld. I can also identify spirits around me. I'm really not all that useful for your research.
I'll be the judge of that, Chelsea said,
her expression looking like a dark grin. Chapter 46. I shook my head, walking together with Lifra and Tsubaki through the white halls of the research facility. Chelsea had taken the bone wand with her to conduct some additional tests to determine if the wand posed any additional dangers to the facility. Before she left, however, I asked if she would give us tools with which to travel between worlds, similar to Lifra's dagger. Chelsea didn't have any problem with that and immediately produced a pair of golden coins, one for myself and the other for Tsubaki. Apparently, this was the standard form of the world transit token, which was used in the remodeling of the fairy rings.
Is there anywhere else you want to take us? I asked, looking over at Lifra, who had a thoughtful expression on her face.
Nope.
She shook her head quickly. Nobody else asked to urgently see you when you came back or anything, so it's fair game now.
The three of us made it back to the elevators, taking a ride to the exit of the facility. Once outside, Tsubaki channeled her powers through the coin that she had been given. Doing so was an unfamiliar process for her, so it took her multiple attempts to establish the void gate. When she did, however, the three of us walked through, finding ourselves hovering in the air, high above Ashtanu. The only reason I knew that we were even in Deccan was the rich aura of Dimensium that filled the air. Combining that with seeing the mighty palace rising in the distance gave me enough to guess our location. However, everything else looked completely different. Outside of the city, there were untamed forests that spanned to the horizon, giving way only when the ocean began. For the city itself, the older buildings had entirely been replaced with towering spires and sleek designs, flying vehicles zooming along throughout the city. I could still see the holographic advertisements that I saw previously, but they were now far more prevalent. If there was something sad, it was that despite all of this, the number of people that could be seen in the city felt almost empty. Whether it was the amount of foot traffic or the flying vehicles, it felt as if there were not nearly enough people for the scale of the city. I took a deep breath, sealing a portion of my abilities and changing my appearance into that of a black-haired kitsune. When Tsubaki saw this, she immediately followed suit, her outfit altering into a long black dress as her facial features shifted. Only Lifra showed no intention to change her appearance. But then again,
since it looks like you two want to explore, I'm going to go off and take care of some stuff. Okay? There's adventure just around the bend.
After she said that, she cut open another portal to jump through, leaving the two of us to descend from the sky. As we passed down below the top of the city's skyline, the view seemed to shift, the buildings beginning to eclipse our view. Even the most extravagant cities from my past life would not have a view like this. Additionally, I hadn't been able to tell from above, but I could feel myself and Tsubaki passing through a projected display that covered the city. When we looked up, we could see what looked to be a news report covering the sky. A one-way display for important news? Well, it was likely used primarily for important news. At the moment, it was reporting the weather, so anyone who looked up would be aware that there was a storm scheduled to start in 20 minutes. Once the two of us landed on the city streets, we noticed a few people sending glances our way before moving on along their own paths. There was, I wouldn't say a depressing aura to the city, or even particularly a gloom. Instead, it simply felt like people were used to the current state of things.
Tsubaki trailed just behind me as we walked, maintaining her position even when we were in disguise. I closed my eyes, releasing my world sight to sweep through the city. Given the scarcity of foot traffic, I wasn't worried that I would run into anyone. However, I quickly found myself puzzled as I understood the layout of the city. Udana, I called out, immediately feeling as if my thoughts had reached her. Why aren't there any schools in Ashtanu? For the goddess of education, I could not imagine her giving up on something as simple as schooling for children. Surely she didn't just put basic knowledge into spheres and send them to kids to have them learn, right? No matter what happened, I couldn't see her wanting things to evolve in that direction. Oh, that's actually pretty simple. Because of the last invasion, there was a massive decrease in population throughout many worlds. To avoid children feeling isolated from their peers, most worlds now conduct schooling in the virtual world. It's easier for teachers to design a specialized curriculum, and they can reach more students at once. While children receive their basic education in the virtual world, their real selves are undergoing practical training. For example, the children of Ashtanu are currently out in the forest to the east, observing the local flora and fauna under the protection of one of Acalia's huntresses. They will probably have some archery training before returning to the city. I gave a nod when I heard that. I hadn't seen any children in the city, aside from those with longer lifespans, like the elves.
As for those, it was likely that they were old enough that they had already completed their education and had just not reached physical maturity yet.
I see.
When we arrived here, I almost thought that we had entered a city from fragments of Acidia. There was a small chuckle from Udana when I said that. A lot of the more recent architectural designs in the Mitong systems are inspired by them. Because the civilizations in Acidia expand across the stars, they had to adopt a modular design for their buildings, so that they would be better able to build, regardless of where they wished to settle. Since they helped us rebuild, it's only natural that we share the same style. I nodded my head once more, thinking it over. In that case, is there anywhere that you think we should see while we're here? I asked, Udana falling silent as she gave it serious consideration. Go to the very center of the city. Look for the temple. It will have a statue of me praying in front of it, carved from dimensium. After Udana said that, I relayed our destination to Tsubaki, the two of us shifting course. As we weren't in any particular hurry, it took us more than half an hour before we found the statue that she had spoken of. Unlike most buildings in Ashtanu, this one had a fairly steady flow of foot traffic. I could feel that there were a large number of gods and fallen deities among those entering and leaving the temple. When I stepped inside, I saw that there were statues made from dimensium, featuring every god or goddess in the greater pantheon, all with their heads lowered in prayer. At the far end of the room, I even saw myself standing, hands behind my back with my eyes closed. Each statue stood at least 5 meters tall, and that was for the smaller ones like Aurovi and Scarlet. Trivals stood more than 10 meters, as another example. Looking around the room, I noticed that there weren't any elevators or stairs leading to other floors, or even any doors to other rooms. Instead, people simply walked to a statue, bowed their heads, and placed their hands on a pedestal in front of it. As soon as they did so, their bodies vanished. When people wanted to leave, they would appear in the center of the room, where a large space was cleared for their arrival.
"Hello there," a voice called out to Tsubaki and myself. I turned, seeing a kitsune with bright red hair walking over, a smile on her face. She wore long green robes and had bright green eyes. "Is this your first time visiting the Greater Temple?"
"That's right," I nodded my head simply. "I've been a bit out of touch with the world for a while and haven't been out of Fior lately."
"No wonder," she nodded her head. "My name is Priscilla, a priestess of the church. Would you like me to introduce you to the temple?"
"That would be appreciated." I smiled back at her, and she turned to lead us away from the door.
After V-Day struck, many facilities in the world were destroyed, including most of the temples. Rather than rebuild them separately, the surviving leaders of each religion sought an audience with the greater pantheon, asking permission to build a unified temple. Here, we can show our solidarity as one people, regardless of our individual faith. Each of these statues contains a teleportation spell, which allows a person to visit a different floor, where specialized facilities are made for each god or goddess present. There, they can learn the individual doctrines, and even undergo training to become a formal priest or priestess of that deity. If the deity in question shows them particular favor, they may even be selected as a personal disciple. Though, I must warn you that this is a rare occurrence.
I see. I looked around the room, picturing what each of their floors must look like. However, there was one thing that I couldn't understand. What about the keeper's floor? Like the others, there was a pedestal in front of my statue, though very few people walked towards it compared to the others. I've never heard of the keeper publicly accepting a priest, aside from those in Olympus. Priscilla blinked in surprise before nodding her head.
That's true. Of the greater pantheon, it is said that the keeper is the most silent. Many say that he is mourning the losses after V-Day. Some claim that this is normal, and that he has little attention to spare for the mortal world as he performs his duties. Typically, any newcomer to the temple will visit the keeper's statue at least once to try their luck. Otherwise, the only ones that frequent the floor are those who wish to keep it properly maintained. I nodded my head, thinking. In that case, may I ask which deity you are a priestess of?
My apologies, I do not wish to assume.
Priscilla giggled lightly. I have taken the trials of priesthood for every deity of the greater pantheon. This is standard for those that work in the greater temple for a long time like myself. Rather than favoring a single god or goddess, I devote myself to understanding all of them and how they work together. I gave a small smile as I thought about that. Then, could you introduce all of them to me? It's been a while since I learned the recent trends with regards to the widespread religion. Priscilla blinked in confusion, but maintained her smile as she nodded her head. Despite how long it would take to discuss each deity, she was happy to do so. By the time Priscilla had finished describing the primary rules of the final goddess, Scarlet, more than an hour had passed. She had only rarely seen someone so interested that they stayed to hear a lecture for so long without already being a member of any one religion. And she could tell that these two were not formal members, given that they seemed genuinely surprised by some of the commonly known facts about the Greater Pantheon. "I believe that I have covered everyone." Priscilla folded her hands in front of herself, her smile blooming even wider. "Impressive," the man said with a nod of his head, his gaze roaming across the various statues. "It's nice to see that there are people like you here to take care of things." Priscilla wasn't entirely sure what he meant by that, but took it as the compliment it appeared to be. "Thank you. Do you have any particular deity that you would like to offer faith to?" She could sense that the two of them were already gods, but it was common for even gods to serve a religion. The man among the duo thought about it for a moment. "Maybe next time. Our trip here took longer than I expected, though I am quite satisfied with the results. Hopefully, next time you will have even more to tell," he said with a meaningful smile, confusing Priscilla as he turned to leave with his partner. "I believe that I covered everything," Priscilla said, tapping her chin in thought. As she did, her eyes suddenly widened, a message window appearing in front of her. "You have completed the Keeper's trial. You have been chosen to receive the position of priest for the Keeper. Do you accept?" Priscilla let out a shocked gasp, immediately rushing out of the temple and surprising the other attending priests and priestesses. When she arrived outside, she looked around, unable to find the duo that had just left. However, she could feel the fading energy in the air that typically marked a teleportation. Priscilla bit her lips gently, thinking it over. Naturally, she chose to accept. When she did so, she felt a rush of information flooding into her mind, knowledge that had been prepared beforehand. The Keeper did not have his own doctrine. He did not have any requirements for his followers. Instead, he offered a simple truth. Due to his nature as the Keeper, there were often long periods of time that he was unable to closely observe the world. After she accepted this information, Priscilla became aware of the blessing that came from being the Keeper's priestess. Within her mind was a library, every book containing a different divine domain. As the Keeper's priestess, she could create one ability for every domain present, which would occupy a single page of the domain's book. Afterwards, she would be able to freely use the abilities that she had created. "Priscilla?" Another priest of the temple walked out, placing a hand gently on her shoulder. "Is everything okay? It is unlike you to rush out like this."
Yes, it's fine. More than fine," Priscilla responded, her face lighting up. The Keeper chose me." She had to check to make sure that there was nothing in the information that she had been given about keeping this a secret. And only when she had done so did she reveal this truth. "The Keeper chose you?" "As what?" the man asked, eyes wide. There were only a few things these words could mean, given the context, but each was more surprising than the last.
"I am the priestess of the Keeper, chosen by him personally," she answered honestly, turning to face her fellow priest. She spoke in no uncertain terms, knowing that he was similarly a priest of Arena, and possessed the power to see through deception. This was a major event,
one that she had no doubt would change her life within the temple. Chapter 47.
"You gave her a blessing, my keeper?" Tsubaki asked in confusion, as we appeared near Olympus, having found its position after it teleported to the system. I offered a small nod of my head, smiling. I've never had a true priestess. Well, I don't plan to bring her into Olympus or anything like that. I thought that it would be nice to have one in the mortal world, especially given the recent invasion. In truth, I had been impressed by Priscilla's passion and commitment to her duties. Even though it was taking time out of her day for a seemingly meaningless task, she went on for more than an hour at the request of a total stranger to talk about each of the major gods she served. If it was someone like that, I didn't mind letting them be the one to be my voice outside of Olympus. While she was explaining, I was busy compiling both the information that she would need as well as an ability to grant her. The information was easy. I just had to set up conditions for her to contact me, or contact the others to get to me in the case of emergency, and explain why I wasn't always available to respond. For the ability to grant her, I had been creating the books of divine domains within my shadow world for so long, without any real means of actually using them. This seemed like the perfect method. Then, if things with Priscilla worked well, I would be able to implement the same strategy for future priests. Tsubaki gave a small nod of acceptance, seeming to think things over. She had long ago established the Church of Light, but had always kept it rather small. No doubt she understood the benefits of having a church. Udana sat on the highest ledge of her palace, her eyes watching the cityscape of Ashtanu. Not far behind her, Asnod appeared, his hands behind his back. "Is anything the matter?" he asked, gently, causing Udana to shake her head. "Nothing's particularly wrong," she said, turning her head to look back. "How is your farm going?" "I have not yet reached any success when it comes to preparing the void beasts as a dish suitable for normal consumption. However, I don't plan to give up just yet," he answered with a smile, moving to sit next to Udana. "I received a report that Olympus has been spotted in the system again. Are you planning to go back there?" Before V-Day, Udana had ruled Deccan from Olympus, just as Scarlet did from Bloodhaven. However, during the events of V-Day, Udana chose to leave Olympus to remain with her people. Similarly, she has been with Deccan since then, helping with its recovery efforts, and had not yet returned to Olympus in that time. "I may," she nodded her head with a small smile, her gaze lifting to observe the sky. "Things have finally started to stabilize, so there wouldn't be any harm in returning at this point." After she said that, her brow twitched, looking off into the distance. "Though it seems someone else might be busy. They might need your help in Fior." Asnod's eyes widened at that, nodding his head as he turned to leave. On the 60th floor of Fior, there was a sudden surge of excitement within the floor advancement party. Within this facility, there were thousands of individuals waiting at designated spaces to simply place their hands on the wall, opening a gate and observing what was on the other end. They each did this nearly 1,000 times a day, a simple and almost meaningless job, but well-paying. Now one of the workers let out a cry of surprise, slapping the button on his gate stabilizer. Like the other workers, he wore a thick suit designed to protect him from a number of hostile environments. After an unlucky worker died from not properly wearing his protective gear, everyone had been more careful to secure themselves, even if the chances of a jackpot were low. Just now he had stuck his head through the gate, seeing a faint red mist that spread as far as he could see. His eyes widened, pausing for a moment as he realized that this was the 61st floor of Fior. It wasn't until his suit alarm sounded, warning him of damage sustained, that he was pulled back to his senses. He quickly pulled his head back and stabilized the portal, preventing it from closing naturally. When he did so, an alarm echoed throughout the building, shocking the other workers. "The 61st floor has been found. Repeat, the 61st floor has been found."
this news was received with mixed reactions. For many, this was simply an easy job that could provide them with a stable income. For others, they were excited to see what awaited them beyond this dull floor. Following the alarm, the manager of the facility made their way to the worker who made the discovery, seeing that the helmet of his suit had already partially melted. "How long were you inside?" he asked in shock. The worker, stunned, had to think back to it.
"I only put my head inside for a few seconds, sir."
Following the standard procedure, he produced the environmental details that the suit had been able to collect during the brief exposure. The manager took the information, nodding his head. He grabbed his radio, his voice echoing out to the rest of the facility. "Everyone, take a 30-minute break while we analyze the data. The advanced party will be formed once the analysis is finished." After he said that, he immediately left, heading to a control center built into the basement of the facility. Once there, he inserted the chip that contained all of the environmental data and began the analysis process. Just from looking at the damaged suit, he was sure that they would need to modify the suits slightly to withstand the atmosphere of the next floor. Sure enough, as the minutes passed, more and more information was pieced together from the recorded data. With every new revelation, the manager's face distorted more and more. It was no longer a question of whether or not they would need to modify the suits, but whether the modification would make any difference. The composition of the energy filling this floor seemed to dissolve any form of energy or matter that it came into contact with.
"We'll need to find something that can specifically resist this energy pattern, but how long would it take? Do we need to contact another world research for help?"
"Sir," a voice suddenly spoke up over his radio, attracting his attention.
"Yes, what is it?" he responded. "Are the workers upset about the development?"
"No, that's not it, sir. The King Consort of Deccan has arrived. He said that his queen asked him to come." The manager's eyes went wide when he heard this. Although Asnod did not often act publicly, his powers were well known as the god of cooking, preparation, and optimization. "Send him to the lower control room at once," the manager called back, before turning to face the elevator, putting a smile on his face. When the elevator door opened, he stepped forward.
"King Asnod, it is an honor to meet you."
Asnod simply smiled, looking at the man.
"Mr. Drakkar, I've heard of your facility for quite a while. It appears that you have made some progress."
"Yes, sir, that's correct. Just now, one of our workers successfully made contact with the 61st floor. However, the environment there is even harsher than we had anticipated. Only a few seconds of exposure had caused substantial damage to our environment isolation suit."
Asnod nodded his head, thinking it over. He briefly looked at the data displayed on the screen.
"Take me to the portal. I need to analyze the situation on the other side myself."
The manager's eyes went wide when he heard that, but still complied. He took Asnod to the elevator, leading him to the stabilized gate.
"This is the one," he said, gesturing for Asnod to proceed as he needed.
Asnod stepped forward, closing his eyes and putting a hand through the portal, causing the manager to gasp in shock. Having seen what the energy on the other side did to the protective suit, he could imagine what was happening to Asnod's hand. Sure enough, when Asnod pulled his hand back, the majority of it had long melted, leaving only a stump of a wrist. Asnod's health bar appeared over his head, though he didn't pay it any mind.
"I see."
He allowed his hand to regenerate by redistributing his divinity, before pushing it through the portal again. This time, his action was swift, and he quickly brought his hand back with a clump of soil from the other side. Immediately afterwards, a black flame engulfed this seemingly ordinary clump of soil, and the manager began to understand what he was doing. If the energy truly melted everything on the other side, there should be no land aside from the black stone. The fact that soil existed meant that it had a composition that resisted the red mist. After a moment, Asnod nodded his head.
"I believe that I have the answer. However, I will need you to modify the designs of your suit, replacing it with this material."
He pulled his hand from the black flame, showing a silver strip of metal. This material should be able to resist the corrosion, similar to the material native to that floor. The manager nodded his head quickly. As the one responsible for the facility, he had the patent for the suits and the digital conversion system. Modifying the suits with a new material was simple, though it would require moving to another floor where their energy would not be disrupted and they could properly scan the new material. He grabbed his radio, sending an order to the workers to meet in Gates Rise on the 59th floor for emergency modifications to their environment gear. Afterwards, he accepted the strip of metal from Asnod respectfully.
"Thank you, sir. With this, we should be able to finally make progress conquering the floors of Fior."
Asnod simply smiled.
"You would have discovered it sooner or later. All I did was speed up the process."
After saying that, he turned and began walking towards the exit, considering his work here to have been completed.
"It's done," Asnod said as he returned to Adana's side.
"They should be able to properly begin their expedition later this evening."
Udana smiled at that.
"Good. It's about time we got moving with Fior again.
We should only be a few floors from finding his hometown. The Maxers of Fior are finally at a strength that they can contend with them in their base form now. So we should be ready to make our move to connect with them."
Asnod nodded his head in agreement.
James said that his people were extremely savage in the past. It would be best if they had moved on beyond that point. However, if they haven't, it shouldn't be too hard for our top forces to handle themselves. Chapter 48. Dana quickly arrived within her shadow world, standing opposite the two familiar clones of herself. She closed her eyes, sensing their states, and let out a brief sigh. Unfortunately, they were unable to remain within the world while Dana herself was in the admin room. Otherwise, she would have kept them active to recover more. As it stood, neither they nor herself were fully recovered from the big fight against the Void God.
"At least we're not going to need to fight urgently, so it should just take a couple days for us to get all patched up," Clara said with a faint chuckle, though Sienna tilted her head.
"Digital conversion, admin?"
Both Dana and Clara looked over at Sienna, processing the meaning of her short words. Ever since she had chosen to be the taciturn one, she had kept her words as brief as possible to convey her meaning.
"You mean we should try to use the digital conversion system's new admin accounts to supplement our recovery?" Dana asked, to which Sienna nodded her head.
"It's possible," Clara mused. "It would be too hectic to do in a fight. But as long as we don't rush it, we can recover our key and mana with that system. As for the damage to our spirits, well, we have our own ways of dealing with that."
As she said that, a small grin appeared on her face. Dana simply rolled her eyes, nodding. She focused, accessing the digital conversion system to create a large number of Mage Heart and Blood Heart crystals, which manifested on the ground in between them.
"This should be more than enough," she nodded her head.
While she didn't make enough to return all three of them to their peak, she made enough that their natural recovery would do the rest soon. Clara simply chuckled, picking up one of the red gems first and working to absorb it.
"So what kind of project do you want to do, now that the big invasion is over?"
Dana thought about that for a long moment.
"You still have the file for the replicating drone, right?" she asked, to which Clara nodded.
"Wait, you're not wanting to make another machine empire in the real world, are you? I don't think that would work, given that pretty much any alien species was wiped out on V-Day."
When Clara said that, Dana shook her head.
"No, I don't want a machine empire. I'll leave that to the head of research. Someone's going to want to check up on him soon, by the way. I was just thinking that you could apply them more actively to Sirius, now that the admin accounts were in place.
While you do that, I want to work on new crafting techniques. Now that Fragments of Acidia was reset, everyone lost the progress that they had in regards to faction quests. We still achieved some advancement from absorbing their technology, but I want to see if I can go beyond what they achieved in the game."
Clara let out a faint whistle.
"That's a tall order. You going to do this solo, or..."
Dana shook her head. I'm confident in myself, but not that confident. For this one, I planned to visit Tubrock. The two of us together can come up with new crafting ideas. If possible, I would like to advance beyond them when it came to crafting divine armaments, at the very least. Sienna, I've got a mission for you as well, Dana said, turning to look at Sienna. The familiar, meanwhile, simply tilted her head.
Replenish army?
No. You can do that passively. I want you to work on a new type of troop. We know from Thelsa that it's possible to create gods from the world's shadow if the user themselves is a god.
Fallen shadows?
Sienna asked suddenly, to which Dana nodded. That's right. I want you to try to make fallen god shadows. If we have to face another enemy like the Void God guy in the future, I want more forces that are specialized at fighting in the Void. Sienna simply nodded her head, accepting her mission and clenching her fist in a guts pose.
Leave it to me.
I let out a faint sigh after we returned to Olympus, smiling towards Tsubaki. Now that I had at least done a rough check to get an idea of the situation, and resolved a potentially world-ending threat on another front, I had yet more business to take care of. I'll be returning to the admin room briefly. There's no need to fast forward. So I'll be back soon, I promised, to which Tsubaki nodded her head. In that case, I shall explore Olympus, and see if there are any new facilities that have been added, she said, with a respectful bow. I nodded my head, focusing on returning to the admin room. Once I was there, I sat down on the couch, opening up the guild chat. Most of those who had their own defensive battles to worry about wouldn't be done yet, but it was still best to check in and let them know that I was finished. Sure enough, it's not very active right now. Earth Force 1. Anyone around at the moment? Everlasting.
Oh, hey, you made it through your defense already. Weren't you up against Ragnarokker?
Earth Force 1. That's right. It was an intense battle for my people, but it was thankfully over without too much delay. Everlasting.
Right. That's the guy that loves to throw out the world enders, right? Those guys tend to do all their damage up front.
Earth Force 1.
Yeah. And he had something that called itself a void god.
Everlasting.
A void god? You mean like a fallen god?
Earth Force 1.
I wish it was that simple. No, it claimed to be a void monster that had absorbed the essences of fallen gods enough that it became able to write its own rules.
Everlasting.
That is troubling. I've never encountered something like that before. If I had to guess, I think that is a rather specialized unit that Ragnarokker is raising, so it should be hard for it to appear naturally.
Earth Force 1.
That's good. I almost lost one of my best people because of it. And it delayed the end of the battle long enough for my worlds to be ravaged.
Everlasting.
Oh, no. Are you planning to reset?
Earth Force 1.
I had enough defenses, so the damage isn't irreparable, but I'm definitely not going to be finding any alien races with any of my worlds anymore.
Everlasting.
That's a shame. Alien civilizations can be a great source of technological and cultural advancement. Still, the important thing is that you're still safe. Are you planning to sell the information about the Void God to the Gilded Branch?
Earth Force 1.
I could, but I don't think the information would be all that valuable for just a single unit type, would it?
Everlasting.
If it were a normal unit, no. However, this sounds like a trump card. Going by their normal standard, they'd pay roughly 50,000 points for information on a Rank 4's trump card. My eyes widened when I saw that amount. 50,000 points may not be too significant of a number at this point in time for me, but it was still a nice bonus, especially after I had just set Terra up with her new funds.
Earth Force 1.
Right. I'll talk to them after this. How did your match go?
Everlasting.
I had a pass this month. My next opponent's an old customer, so I don't think that I have much to worry about.
Earth Force 1.
Right. By the way, do you have any games or anything to specifically help train people against the Void? It's something of a hot topic in my world, for what I consider as obvious reasons.
Everlasting.
Actually, I do. This one's a bit different from the games that you've been getting until now, though.
Earth Force 1.
Oh? How so?
Everlasting. Well, until now, you've been getting massive online games. This game is meant to be played by either a single player or a small group. The genre ranges from comedy to horror, depending on the generated scenario. Basically, it randomly generates a world within a set of parameters that the player decides. They can set themselves up with whatever type of life that they want. But there's a twist.
Everlasting. The world that is generated for them has a simulated void beast infection. It is up to the player to find the rules that govern the void beast in their instance. If it has a local banishment method, they are to find that and use it. Otherwise, when they identify the rules of the void beast, they submit it to the system. Everlasting. If they get the answer right, they clear the game and can choose to either keep their world to enjoy the life that they designed, or set up a new scenario. The danger and difficulty of the void beast directly correlates to the scale of the life that they create. For instance, if they choose to create a scenario where they are the king of a large country, the beast may be either incredibly tricky to discover or incredibly dangerous to fight. Earth Force 1. And if they submit the wrong rules?
Everlasting. Game over. Don't worry, they won't die or anything. Just ends the scenario and forces them to start a new one.
Earth Force 1.
Sounds easy enough to understand. Is there anything else I need to know about it?
Everlasting.
The AI functions similarly to Fragments of Acidia, which you purchased before, meaning that the significant characters in an individual's life will be pulled from volunteer souls, while others have their own generic AI template. Aside from that, the price is a bit steep. In total, it's 110,000. Most of that goes into the instanced world generation. I had to set up a number of custom systems to let the custom instance worlds get made. 110,000 was a lot, but I felt like it might be worth it, especially after I get the points from Gilded Branch. That information alone would cover nearly half of the bill. More importantly, this would give enough a significant improvement to our foundation when dealing with void beasts.
Earth Force 1.
Thanks. I'll talk to my people, but I think that I'll probably be getting it. Sounds like the kind of thing that I could really use right now.
Everlasting.
Happy to help a loyal customer. I chuckled as I ended the communication, focusing on sending a message to Balu next. It was time to let her know about the information. Hopefully, Sarah was right on her estimate.
Chapter 49.
It didn't take long for me to connect with Balu, who revealed that she was on the offensive this time, so she didn't really have anything to worry about. However, when I told her the reason behind my call, she said that she had to check some things and would get back to me. Whatever she was doing, it took her more than half an hour to complete before I received another request for a communication. Starkiller.
Sorry. Things get tricky when it comes to higher-ranked keepers like Ragnarokker. Personally, I've never gotten higher than the introductory level of the third rank, so I had to consult to understand what standards to use to measure the value of the information. I should be good now to hear what you want to sell us.
Earth Force 1.
It's fine. According to my guildmaster, this will probably count as a trump card for him.
Starkiller.
Your guildmaster is Everlasting, right?
Earth Force 1.
That's right. The creature that Ragnarokker sent over was a monster that acted as a general for the other void beasts. After he died, they went berserk and started attacking chaotically. As for its power, its nature was that of a void beast, but it called itself a void god instead. It had consumed the essence of multiple fallen gods and gained the ability to write its own rules. I don't know how many rules it could have at a time.
Earth Force 1.
What I do know is what my friend encountered while fighting him. He was able to make rules that could redirect the damage dealt to him, destroying hordes of enemies at once, and one rule that it made created a weakness in an opponent the moment that they attacked. Whenever he struck this weakness, they would immediately die.
Starkiller.
Right, let me see. A self-customizing void beast with no apparent restrictions for the rules that it could make. Given that Ragnarokker is a rank 4 keeper, it's unlikely that it can make enough rules to create a new world. That means that it probably can't use more than 10 at a time at the upper limits. Being intelligent and capable of leading troops increases its threat level as well.
Starkiller.
Your guildmaster was right. This definitely qualifies as a trump card. According to the chart I was given, information like this should be able to go for exactly 62,500 points. How does that sound?
Earth Force One?
Really? That's a bit more than what she said. Starkiller. According to the information you gave, Ragnarokker should be at the upper limit of rank 4. Because of that, the information is worth an extra 25% above normal. If he were a rank 5 keeper, the price would increase to 150,000 for a trump card like this. Earth Force 1. That makes sense, I suppose. Starkiller. In that case, would you like me to go over now to handle payment? I can pass the information along to my guild to get the points to pay you any time. Naturally, I agreed, sending her the invite. At the same time, I called the members of the Greater Pantheon together, telling them that there was a new game that I was contemplating getting from Sarah, and that I wanted their opinions on it. After a few moments, I saw something shift on the TV. Balu appeared on the screen, walking around and looking lost. "Hello," she called out. "Wait, which one is this?" "Balu?" I called out to her, and she looked towards me.